From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Four Times Nice, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Riley Croy. I too make nice games. For this special Nicest of 2024 episode, we review a list of the nicest games we played over the past year and go over what we're looking forward to playing and working on in 2025. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start already. I put a little spin on that, and I regret it already.
Aww.
Well,
sometimes we do a nice thing, and then I'm off my game today.
No, I think it was appropriate because it took us a long time to get set up for this particular episode.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
Oh, man.
First, let's say hi to Joanna. Joanna's back in the clubhouse.
Yay. Hello.
For another week.
Again.
And we do love when a guest joins us for the nicest, mm-hmm. and I'm really excited to hear from you. What your nicest and so on is. But first, as Ellen alluded, why did it take us so long to get started today, Joanna?
something, Stephen, and the shock mount came undone.
Look, it's been a long time since I've messed with the mics, I guess, and I forgot that there's clamps that you can just use to take a mic out and put a new one in. So I, basically undid it.
He disassembled the shock mount.
Yeah.
All the rubber bands that holds it together.
Very, yeah. Very careful webbing that holds the mic up.
Yep, I just took it out.
Listener, if you don't know what we're talking about, don't worry about it.
Yeah, just
it
know.
Just slowed us down by 10 minutes.
Yeah, just know I did a dumb. Basically.
And that's why I felt weird doing the intro.
Yep.
It's all Steven's fault.
You're right. You know, I honestly could take that blame. That's fine with me. All right. Nicest of 2024, for listeners who are unfamiliar, when we do the nicest, we talk about games that we enjoyed playing this year that aren't necessarily the best. We just like them.
It's our lazy award show.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So these might not show up on the game awards, but we don't care. But first, we want to talk about our accomplishments this year. Mark, you're on the list first.
Am I?
You are.
Okay, well, I did a couple things this year. I founded a 501c3 organization, a nonprofit company in the state of Minnesota.
Yes.
Called, now don't get distracted by this, it's mm-hmm. called Nice Games Alliance.
Oh.
And
mm-hmm.
what it is a place that can accept donations so that we can fund our local community here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
It happens to be called Nice Games Alliance because I had the idea for this 8 years ago when I had the idea for Nice Games Club.
Mm.
And people liked the name. We didn't have a better name. And the idea is that it's essentially we have a local IDGA chapter, the International Game Developers Association, Twin Cities chapter. And I've talked about it on the show before. Mm-hmm. Our activities, we do events. We do 5 a month now. And we do, and I'm helping to help run it. But it is not an official legal entity. It is a chapter of a different organization called IDGA. And that has been, I've talked a little bit on the show before, and I won't go into a lot of details. That's been difficult for us.
Yeah.
We can't raise money. We can't buy things. We can't hire people. There's things we can't do. And so we've been operating on, sort of this strange limbo between a real nonprofit organization and just a bunch of people hanging out.
Yeah.
And so that's really impeded our ability to do really important work in this community. And so a bunch of us got together and decided, hey, let's actually change that. And so we founded this organization. It's 501c3. It's a public charity. And it's all it's going to do for now is it's going to raise money and then sponsor our local chapter's events. So it's not a replacement for the community chapter, but we'll see what the future holds for what if it becomes more than that.
Mm.
But the goal of it is just to sort of start raising money and do real work in the community.
Yeah.
And that was a process. I don't know how much of it I talked about on the show before, but
I think you brought it up periodically.
I brought it up from time to time, but I didn't really want to talk about it until it was official. But the IRS has now officially deemed it a public charity. We opened a bank account and everything.
Yeah, money.
I donated some money to start out, which is a really interesting feeling to have done that because that is now no longer my money, which is kind of great. It now means that when we want to rent a space for an event mm-hmm. or we want to pay a vendor, the org pays that. It's not, that's great. I'm glad that we have a system for that now. Now, of course, the next step, we apply for grants. We talk to some companies that we can get some sponsorships. We also ask our community to empty their pockets, which, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But we do have a great community. And I think in the past couple of years, especially through the pandemic, I think people do appreciate what the volunteers who have run local community have done and kept it alive. And I would like to think that we will have some success and be able to provide some real things for them. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I'm so busy right now that like this was all supposed to happen over the summer, but like there was a huge delay in the determination from the IRS, which is just, they told me it was normal.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, we say it's a 6-week process, but sometimes it's not. I'm like, oh, great.
Okay.
Like, thanks.
Jeez.
Which I will say this about the IRS. They are such a big behemoth and like a complicated organization, but as soon as you get someone on the phone, they are really nice. Mm, they want to solve your problem. They understand that you're nervous. They know their own reputation. As soon as you get past the point of just being like going through the machine, and it's not actually that hard to get past that point, but it feels weird to get there. One, they are nice. So okay. I don't want to like speak ill of them, but it did take, instead of 2 to 3 months, it took 6 months.
Yeah.
And so all this is happening now where I have a bunch of other things going on. And so I have to sort of get myself excited about gearing up this organization. It's going to be a big project for next year.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one big accomplishment.
Okay.
Next thing is, I've talked about this show before, but I got a new job this year.
Yeah.
I say a job, it's a gig. I'm working on a project that it's still unannounced, and I'm very frustrated by that because I want to tell listeners about it and I want to talk about it more openly. I've told people, the folks at this table know a little bit more about it, but I'm excited about that. It's been a lot of fun to work on, and that should be announced in the spring sometime. And it's been interesting compared to Dream Settler, which I've been on for 3+ years now. And that project is going much slower than I would like.
Mm.
It's still, I mean, there's still a lot that's going great about that, you know, but I would have wanted to be out by now. This project was always going to be smaller. The timeline was much shorter and it's more definite. And I'm really enjoying that. I'm enjoying working on something that is still kind of big, but much smaller than the other thing I've been spending most of my time on now. So that's been really, really nice.
Nice.
And the last big thing I did this year is I renewed my lease on the office and the clubhouse,
ooh,
which means we're going to be here for in this space for 3 more years.
Awesome.
Which is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's also like, okay, I hope I can sustain it.
Yeah.
But we host a lot of events here. Mm-hmm. And so that's really valuable to me. And then, you know, I love this neighborhood. I've talked a lot about this office space and the clubhouse. And so it's really valuable. And now I got a reduction on the rent, which is good.
Oh,
I negotiated
nice.
Paying a little bit less, which is really good that I did that, considering, that
that's amazing.
Everything is more expensive now.
Yeah.
But I was able to get a pretty sizable chunk off. I think it's probably hard to rent space in this building in particular for a lot of reasons. I won't get into that. It's not that interesting for listeners.
Okay.
But I recognized what I could negotiate, which is like, I don't want to be a person who knows anything about real estate negotiations, but now I am.
Yeah.
It's like how I know a lot about Discord. Like, what a stupid thing to know. I don't like knowing that. I have too many other things I want to know. But now I know about real estate negotiation.
The burden of knowledge.
It's the worst. That's kind of it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Steven, you're next on this list.
I am. I always have a hard time coming up with the accomplishments because I forget what I did 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
But I will... Not even by the time this episode is out, but by the time the year has ended, I will have made 2 movies.
That's a promise, listener.
It is a promise. Otherwise, I fail my class. one of the movies you can already see. We've linked to it in the show notes. Maybe we'll do it again this time. But the other movie hasn't even started filming yet. It's due in 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
But you have the confidence that it will get done and will be a masterpiece.
It will get done.
Okay.
I can't guarantee it's a masterpiece. It's definitely my first movie. So, like, and odds are I'm not going to make another movie, at least not for a while. So,
yeah.
I've been doing that.
I want to say,
yes,
we can't forget when we come back at the end of February or beginning of March, whenever hiatus is over.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about what
the process,
what you learned.
I mean, we can. Yes. That's our roundtable topic.
Yeah.
Sure. We can make it that. Yeah, but that sounds good.
Nice.
We can talk about that for sure. And then also I've made immense progress on a future club game that I also can't talk about.
Yeah.
And it's worse for me because I've been able to talk about anything I've worked on since I've worked at Future Club.
Yeah.
So which is kind of frustrating, but we've made a lot of progress and the game is like really, we got art now. So it like looks
wow.
good. It feels a little better to play. And like, I really feel confident in the design of the game. Like everything
yeah.
feels like it has a solid base.
Mm-hmm.
So that feels really good. I'm really glad that we put in all that work. It took us, you know, all year basically to get to this point, but it was work well spent. yeah, looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to announce it sometime next year.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, knock on wood.
It is one of the weird things about having a platform like we have on this program,
mm-hmm.
especially because one of the mantras we have is sort of like, is openness and communication. It's yeah. a big important thing to us, but yeah. you know, things are announced on a schedule. Like right. I've ranted about this in the show. I'm anti NDA generally, yeah. but when you have a project that's not announced, that's something you should respect, right? Especially right. if you're well, on the project. But what that is frustrating is that if we didn't have this program, it might be less frustrating.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that would make it a lot less frustrating. But also, like, you know, as a group, as Future Club, we want to announce that together. I don't want to be the one yeah. to burst that bubble.
You want to be part of that.
Yeah.
That's, I feel the same way about the thing I'm working on. It's like, yeah. I'm desperate to talk about it. And I think I will just say this, and I don't care who knows it. Like, you can tell your friends. Like, it's, you know
yeah.
what I mean? It's not.
Yeah, yeah, like, for sure.
If you haven't signed an NDA, it's not a state secret. Mm. It's fine. Mm. But obviously you want to respect the intention, which is that yes. you want to announce it. You want to announce it as a group together.
Right.
It's just frustrating that it sometimes takes a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I'm at. Yeah. Future Club is working on that. Been working on it for a while. We're hoping we can get to a place where we can self-publish this game. We're mm-hmm. kind of looking for funding in that angle now because it's been difficult to find publisher money. So we'll see where yeah. that goes.
That's an industry-wide
year.
Problem.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But that's enough for me. Ellen, you're on the list.
Yeah, so it was a weird year for me in terms of game development developments. Because, you know, like starting in 2024, I was like, yay, I have a game design role full-time. And then I got promoted into a role that really wasn't design-centered, but still ended up yeah. doing some design work, and it was very strange. And still remains kind of strange. So I didn't really have as much, you know, professional opportunities to do design work.
Right.
But right. in taking that promotion made room for us to hire Lydia and give her, mm-hmm. you know, some more professional opportunities. So that I will list that as an accomplishment for sure.
Oh, absolutely. She's
yeah.
brilliant.
Yeah. And she's absolutely amazing. If you haven't listened to mm-hmm. the episodes where we had Lydia on, they're recent. Why not? What the heck?
Yeah.
So there's that. But last year we did, I did lead game design work on a short game about respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, and mm-hmm. Completed the project last year, but this year it won a bunch of awards in the industry. So
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah. Like we're on two now. Maybe. I think there's a third one we're waiting on to hear back from. So, and one of those awards was like, peer voting, so it was pretty awesome to get that one. And yeah,
that's great.
It's yeah,
pretty exciting. Other than that, my I think personal accomplishment is I'm running out of room for my plants. They're getting too big.
that'll soon you will no longer be able to impulsively buy and place more plants.
I have not impulsively bought any plants for like months. So I'm good with that.
Oh.
And I think the reason
that's
I stopped.
That's an accomplishment.
Right? That is an accomplishment. I should have written that down. But I think the reason I stopped is because I know I don't have any room left. Like, there's no place to put them. I mean, I guess it's.
Yeah.
I could have seen this coming. Plants are known for growing, I guess.
Turns out.
I guess I expected.
I mean, you of all people should know that.
Yeah. I guess I expected more of them to die or something. I don't know. We'll figure this out. If you need.
Yeah,
if
you're just too good at it.
If you want some plants. Let me know, and I'll, you know, prevaricate about giving you some. that's for me. All right, Joanna.
Yeah. Actually, I want to interrupt the program briefly before we move on to Joanna, because the three of us, the regular hosts of the show,
yes.
we also, as a we did a little bit more work on RoBoston this year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And you know, a couple little small milestones that I just didn't want it to go unsaid, because
yeah.
we feel at a point where, like, the game is, I mean... Like, we've talked in the past about how it needs some tweaks or some adjustments, mm-hmm. but we are happy where it is.
Yeah.
Like, it is that game is in a place where it's essentially design complete, ready
yeah.
to go. And we're very, very pleased with it. And, like, the next steps are a whole thing, and we've talked about that.
Yeah.
It's tricky. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a big deal that we brought that back out of mothballs, and we made a couple of really valuable tweaks, and we've got
yeah.
something that we would describe as a winner.
Yeah, true. Good shout.
Go team.
Ooh.
Okay, Joanna.
All right.
Well, I wish I could talk about what I was doing, but... No, I just want to pretend like I have a dark secret. Like
so mysterious.
Yeah. No, that's how I felt. Accomplishments first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, most of the stuff that I've been doing this year is building on the work that I've done in other years. And so it's very iterative, and it doesn't feel as impressive, like, looking back. But I also think that's what's cool is because that's when you start to see, like, you know, polish.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Stuff starts to really shine.
Right.
And so this year I spent a lot of time, at least 6 months, working on, like, serialization and serializing hierarchical state machines and contributing to that open source work that I'm doing. And I got all that done, and that felt really good.
Yeah.
And so now it's on maintenance, which is great.
Listeners who are curious about that can listen to last week's episode where we talked in depth about that super fun topic.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so I'm super proud of that. And then lately I am gearing up to, you know, make another project, but a lot of the stuff that I've been doing, I'm just trying to, you know, take it over the top and make it that much easier to use and that much more enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, we went out to lunch a little bit ago and you talked a little bit about how the maintenance you have of all the various modules you maintain and how just keeping that system working independent of the work itself is its own job. And just talking about, like, you know, polishing things up and feeling iterative. I think every year when we ask ourselves to list our accomplishments, we always want these headline items.
Yeah.
But it's, if you did nothing but maintain what you're working on, like, that's a huge, like, can be a bigger deal.
Unity can't even say they did that.
Right.
So you're doing better than that.
Yep.
I do pride myself on the turnaround time for critical bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, somebody pops in and say, like, oh, you got a problem. And I'm like, cool, and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
Well, then you look like a hero. See?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Well, having a system for that, too, especially if you're the prime maintainer of something and you want to make sure you have good response time, but also things will come in at random times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have your own life to live. Like, how do you,
well,
you need to have kind of a... Oh, I mean, you know, just pretend you have a life. As a developer, we have to sometimes pretend. But, you know, just being able to handle that and not, like, just add it to the list of all the crap you got to do this week is, you know, that's having a system is really valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm crediting you with having a system. You haven't really said you do, but I'm guessing you do.
No, there's no system.
Oh, okay. You just keep on top of it.
I try to do things as soon as, like, I can.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not so much a system, but sooner or later, it's going to get to the point where people are asking for more stuff than I have time for. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Yeah. On Noble Engine, I'll get pull requests for things that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I'll have to be like, well, how do I communicate that?
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure that you want to make sure that you are hearing people when they have feedback. But at the same time, you have to decide, well, do I not want to do this because I don't want to do it or because I don't think the project should have this? And so it's sometimes hard to know the difference.
That's true.
You know, because one of the things I have started doing with that is to say, this is a great idea. Someone can build it if they want, you know, like, or rather, I don't have the capacity for it or whatever.
Yeah.
But even that can be dismissive sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tricky. But just maintaining that kind of, like you say, take care of it when you can take care of it. I am not at that position. I think something will come in randomly and it'll just, like, throw me off for, like, 2 days. I'll be like, okay, should I take a look at this or should I wait till tomorrow when I have time to do mode shifting and, like, set up a different development environment so I can look at that? And then, like, I'll spend all day worrying about that and it'll be like a 5-minute job. You know?
Oh, it's never a 5-minute job.
Yeah.
Well, at least in my world, it's just like, oh, this won't take so long. And it always takes super long.
Yeah.
Well, so then when you finish it, it's a true accomplishment.
It is. Yeah. And so, like, yesterday, I sat down to, like, add the ability to download zip files to something. And I was like, oh, this probably won't be too bad. And it was like 12 hours later.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. We did a lot of stuff. We're the best. Sorry.
Great transition, Steven.
Yeah. Pat yourselves on the back.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the main event, quote unquote, nicest of 2024.
Yeah.
As I said already in the beginning, these aren't the best games. These are just games we liked. We thought they were nice. Mm-hmm. We wanted to give them a shout out.
Yeah.
Ellen is on the list. I think Ellen is on the list first for all of these because I just copy pasted it from last time. So, Ellen.
Oh, okay. All right. So, not a lot of time to play games this year because of all the craziness. But what I have started doing, and I'm really enjoying it, and one of the friends I have made through work, she and I have been meeting at least once a month, and we've been playing through different co-op games. So the ones that we've been doing lately are the games in the We Were Here series. So it's like We Were Here, We Were Here Too, We Were Here Together. There's a couple more we have to get through, and they're like all kind of the same theme right now. Like you're explorers, you're in the tundra, you get stuck in a castle, and it's probably very haunted, and you have to like
Yeah.
independently work through different parts of the haunted castle to like unlock things together until you come back. And yeah, it's been fun to do that.
That's cool.
Yeah, so
I think I've heard of these games because people want me and my brother to stream them because we argue a lot and it would be entertaining
that would be
for
amazing.
viewers.
I agree with them. You should do that.
Yeah, okay. but I've heard good things about these
Yeah,
games.
they're not new, but yeah.
They're effectively just a bunch of like puzzle games, like kind of like Myst but co-op.
Well, yeah, I guess definitely more fun than this.
Okay. That's fair.
I would say they're more like escape rooms, but they're like scary escape rooms. It's like partly escape room, partly haunted house, and definitely
Oh, no
like
one told me it was
and a
scary.
little bit Human Fall Flat, but like
Okay.
only in that you're solving puzzles together, and usually you have to do them, in parallel. So there's a lot
I
of,
see.
Dicer in Class, the Dungeon Skedaddle game.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
where you had like we
That we
had,
worked on.
yeah, it was a game jam game that we worked on together, and the premise of the game was you couldn't see each other's screen. Same thing. Same
Oh,
thing.
okay.
Yeah, it's just
Cool.
that
That's
the
awesome.
instructions to the puzzle are on like a different part of the castle, not on like a completely,
Yeah.
yeah, so. And much scarier. Dicer in Clasp was not scary.
No, it was not.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad you told me they were scary because I was a little interested in them, but now I'm at not at all because I'm
Yeah.
not interested in horror games.
Yeah,
But
no, it's maybe not horror, but
that's good to know.
spookiness.
Spooky enough for me to stay away.
Yeah.
That's fine
Okay.
for me.
So that was my nicest We Were Here series. Again, not new, but I played them this year, so ha. It's our list. We'll do what we want.
Right.
And then honorable mention for me is Bonza or Bonza. I'm not sure.
Bon.
It's like a
Okay.
fun little mobile crossword puzzle game.
Ooh.
But instead of getting the hints and then figuring out the words based on this static puzzle, it's remixed the order of things. So you get a theme and then you get the completed puzzle that's been chopped up into little bits. And so you have to drag the little
Oh.
bits around to make the puzzle and connect all the words, and the one word that you get as a theme, almost like, almost like Wheel of Fortune, is
Oh,
what you do.
interesting.
Yeah, so I've been really enjoying it. And there are just a bazillion puzzles. They have like options for fan made puzzles, so people can submit puzzles, and then they end up on like Puzzle of the Day. And it's been fun for me
Cool.
to do that, especially since Eric loves word games. So if I get stuck, I'll be like, come do this puzzle with me. And so I feel like I'm cheating my way into doing co-op with him. Aha.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, it's pretty fun. So
Yeah.
those are my two.
Cool. Mark, you're next.
Am I next?
You are
Yes.
next.
Fine. We sometimes say this every year, like, what games did we even play?
Yeah.
Which is like the game dev lament, right?
Yes.
And unless I'm really forgetting a bunch of stuff, I feel like this is a banner year for me not playing games.
Okay.
So maybe I say that every year, but I feel like I always have a couple of items. All I can really think about that like really stuck with me, and I did play a lot of smaller games this year, but mostly just to try them out. I think the one is Astrobot, which I talked about on the show before. One of the best platforms I've ever played, but also one that I have a lot of criticisms of in terms of its like complete package. I love all the PlayStation nostalgia is really great. All the platforming mechanics are really great. The pacing is really good. It's very charming, but I feel like it adds up to less than the sum of its parts, which is like a which is that's a really big critique, at least especially in the way I think about games. But all of those pieces are so great that I still think it's one of the games that I enjoyed the most this year. Certainly one of the ones I played the most this year. And because I'm very much a platformer person, that goes a long way. I really liked it.
Didn't everyone love it?
Everyone loved it.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
this is not a unique opinion, but I think everybody was like, oh, it's gonna be like a PlayStation sort of branding cash in. Oh, it's not. It's really charming and cute. And I feel like my critique of that is like, yeah, I don't have a problem with the PlayStation brandy stuff, the sort of co-marketing of it all. But I feel like that doesn't really It's like the game could have done better than that. It could have had a better story. It could have had more
sure.
structure. Its platforming could have been tied in more to what it was trying to say, even about its like nostalgia branding stuff.
I see.
And I feel like it was just like all the parts were fine. Most of the parts were phenomenal. But like when you put it all together, it's just a box of parts.
Yeah, okay.
And that kind of bothered me, even as I loved every minute of it.
So, I understand.
So you wanted Astrobot to have like a deeper meaning.
I don't know about that's. I think you're putting me. I did. No, I appreciate the interrogation on this because I think it is hard to explain. Like I didn't. It doesn't need to say anything about life. But what I was hoping that it would just be like, you know, to have some kind of connection between its thematic elements
yeah.
and its mechanical elements.
No, I mean,
more
I'm,
than just like mm-hmm. a. Oh, it's you're playing the cross levels, and here's a bunch of crosses, or you know, like
yeah.
to represent the PlayStation button. Like that is a very tangential relationship that works. It's interesting. It's fun, and I don't have a problem with that. And but I think they could have done something more or something more interesting with the really interesting with the good platform. They had
yeah.
this sort of story about the giant PlayStation 5 that you ride as a spaceship gets all its parts stolen by a weird monster, and the monster is so forgettable and comic. Its forgettability was not itself interesting when it could have been.
Mm.
Like, I'm not asking them to make, like, a more robust or villain with motivations or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was just a stand-in bad guy who sets the thing in motion, they could have – that could have been interesting. And they didn't – they just did it because that's how you get it in motion.
You just need it – yeah, yeah. It
yeah.
Just
and the fact that you collect all these different bots as you save them.
Yeah.
And many of them are PlayStation branded.
Yeah.
But not all of them are.
Mm.
Like, there's, like – 250 or 300 robots you save, and something like 120 of them are like characters from other PlayStation games, and that's really neat, especially if you like have if you really like a lot of that nostalgia. And I don't have a ton of PlayStation nostalgia, but I recognize enough of them to really enjoy when I came across some of those characters. But the fact that there are 300, but not all of them were PlayStation characters,
yeah,
just a lot of them were,
yeah,
felt to me like, well, why didn't we just have fewer characters, or why didn't you just find more characters to make all the robots
right.
be unique instead of having a bunch of generic ones
yeah.
so you could get to 300. Like
yeah.
it didn't, it just felt a little bit yeah. like they, I don't know. And it's hard because at the same, like I'm very clear. I love this game.
Right. So, you know? Okay. So I mean, I totally understand. I haven't played Astrobot.
Yeah.
But I totally understand what you're saying, because like I feel this from certain games when I'm like, oh, this game could have connected some certain parts together so that they make more sense.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a lot of times people will just, like, input, like, a roguelike aspect or deck-building aspect or whatever aspect into a game because it's the mechanism in which you play the game.
Yeah.
But they don't think deeper about it in a way that will make the game's themes feel more cohesive.
Yeah.
And so I'm imagining that's kind of what Astrobot feels like, except that, like, basically all of the parts that don't necessarily feel like fully of a cohesive whole still are like amazing. So like,
yeah, yeah. Well,
so it's kind of hard to have that criticism because you're like, you can't tell people because it's not your job to tell them what they're supposed to make from it. But like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, you also feel like there should have been more. Yeah. So
yeah. Every world, every like zone in the game
yeah.
ends with like a final level that's themed around one of the headline PlayStation franchises.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's like an Uncharted one and a God of War one. Like, and those are like those are the showcase levels.
Yeah.
And the way that works is you are saving the bot that is dressed up like Kratos or something.
Yeah.
You know? But what ends up happening is that you save the bot in this little mini level, and then in the next level is the big showcase level where you play as that character.
Okay.
But what actually literally happens is you arrive on this planet that's themed this way, and then you walk up, and then there's a cutscene where you save that character again, and then they give you their costume.
Oh.
And then you play wearing their costume. And it just is like, I don't get it. Like,
yeah.
Why not just make my main character, my Astrobot guy, like just sit in the corner and I will play as the Kratos bot because the mechanics are the same. Who cares? But they had this like, it just doesn't, it's like this weird, and it doesn't matter. It plays the same either way.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like if they were really trying to have like a story about you rescuing all these different characters, and the fact they all come from different franchises is kind of fun
because
like that creates a lot of like variety and like tone. And because the mechanics are similar, they find a way to make the mechanics from those source games kind of like they find like a nice blend, which is really cute.
Yeah.
You know, so like when you're playing in the Uncharted level, you know, there's tons of cover-based shooting in that game, which is hard to do as a platformer, but they kind of make it work, and then you like shoot paintballs, and it's cute.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they find ways to make the mechanics and the levels play differently depending on what source you're working with. So even if you're not familiar with the original games, that variety is interesting.
Yeah.
But then they just don't really go all the way with it.
Sure.
In a weird, strange way. I don't know. Again, I'm griping, but I love this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the one that really sits with me, and I don't have any honorable mentions because I cannot think of anything. Maybe it's because I've been thinking about it in this dimension so much that it's really distracted me from thinking about other games that really impacted me this year. You know?
Is there a platformer that you think nails that cohesiveness more rather than like people
yes.
in a corporate environment saying, hey, highlight all our franchises?
I think two of them do it really great. Little Big Planet. Mm. Particularly the first one.
I was thinking about that, yeah.
Little Big Planet is so the theme of creation and
yeah.
and like crafts, like where everything is stitched together and it looks beautiful, but it's not perfect. Like, which is also how you do your customizations. You're given these tools.
That's true.
And, you know, like any user-created thing, but the game encourages you to play with your creations rather than like be like a master builder or something. And that is really, in its single-player campaign, those themes really come out.
Yeah.
And that's a cute game that doesn't have much of a deeper message, but, like, it really nails those connections in a way that, like, leverages any amount you want to engage with it. So if you're just going to play through the campaign, all of that messaging, that structure, that, like, that tone, that notion of, like, of adventure but also variety and flexibility, it's all there if you just play through the campaign. But then if you want to engage with it more, you just get even more of that delivered to you, which is why so much of the stuff in that game, all the creations in that game were so interestingly creative and diverse, because the game really established that that's what you should make in this game, is not just more Mega Man levels, but like things that are weird and different. And mm-hmm. people really took that to heart. And mm-hmm. so that played with how its audience engaged with it. That's one great example. The other one I like to cite is Super Mario Galaxy, which I think is a great, like, it's sort of gravity
the
mechanics.
One on the Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. It's gravity mechanics really played into the story of Rosalina and of the Lumas and, like, just the aesthetic of it. I love Mario, but I'm the first to say Mario is kind of a grab bag of aesthetic and symbols.
Yeah.
Like, Mario Wonder, I think, is really good, whereas Mario Odyssey, I feel, is a little hodgepodgey. And, again, brilliant game. But Mario Galaxy is the one where I feel like it felt like a real cohesive whole in every piece of it.
Fascinating.
And so Little Big Planet, Mario Galaxy, that is the standard I hold, like, because I love platformers so much
yeah.
in particular. It's kind of the standard I hold it to. And a lot of people are like, oh, Astrobot is PlayStation's Mario Galaxy because it's that good. And like mechanically it's that good, but just mechanically it's that good.
Okay.
You know?
I disagree about Super Mario Galaxy, but that's fine. Yeah.
Wait, have we had this argument before?
No.
You don't like Sunshine, do you?
Yeah, you know I do.
All right, well, you and I are going to fight in the street about this later.
Mark's doing a lot of fighting this past couple weeks.
That was a callback.
Yeah. Okay, I got Nicest, and y'all know what it is already, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you don't. Dragon's Dogma 2. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked about it enough on the show. As it is, it's my fault. I need to talk about it more clearly.
You did explain to me what this game was.
Yes.
And I forgot.
Yeah, that's fair. The narrative is nonsensical. You play as this person whose heart has been taken from a dragon, or by a dragon, and the dragon challenges you to a fight, but then you basically do a whole bunch of random side quests and stuff, and it kind of doesn't matter until you decide to fight the dragon.
Yeah.
And even when you do that, there's weird stuff that happens, and it narrative's not very great. But honestly, a lot of what I liked about Dragon's Dogma 2 is that it felt basically like an Xbox 360 era game.
Yeah.
That was transitioned into 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, like, it took a lot of the trappings and things. It took a lot of the trappings and stuff of the first game and basically just did it again. And I liked that because it felt intentional. It felt nostalgic in a ways for me. But I missed that aspect of it. I've come to recognize that I start missing certain aspects of, like, 360 era games. Because, like, a lot of those games were sort of experimental
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways, in ways that, like, I feel like AAA games can't really be now because, like, they cost too much money to make, and there's they need to make some of that back, so they make sure that it appeals to a lot of people, and so they use a lot of the same design mechanisms in order to make it familiar to people who they want to take money from. And by take, I mean like the people are buying. They're not like actively taking it. They're not being terrible about it. I just mean they want money. They need money because they need to make back the work it took to make the game. But this game feels like it doesn't have a lot of those aspects of it. There's a lot of things that like still feel intentional, but like frustrating in a modern game sense that I really appreciate about it. So that's why it's my nicest. Really, it's my nicest because I've been talking about this game for forever, and I wanted it to come out for like 3 years, and it did, and I'm glad it's here. Yeah. But one of my other nicest is UFO 50, which I've just recently started playing like within the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been thinking about it for a long time because I think it's really cool that there's just a collection of fictional games that came out on this fictional console, and there's like you could kind of see the thread where like they made this game and then they were like, this is a cool idea, let's build it up a little further, and then they did it again or a couple times. I think that that's really cool that like there's like you can kind of tell the narrative of like how this company worked through just these 50 different games. Also, I think it's really cool that they just sold a pack of really small games.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, it's still a lot of work. You're making 50 games.
Yeah.
But like they're all really small.
Yeah.
So
I'm waiting for the documentary on the game.
Yeah.
Because I believe they did have multiple people making them. It wasn't just one team making all 50, right? That was a big part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have this cohesiveness that is hard to come by when you do a collaborative project.
Yeah.
And each game is pretty unique.
Yeah.
And I know, listeners, you may have remembered that I promised to play this game. And I did.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't played a lot of it.
Okay.
I only played about 6 or 7 of the games.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have the full breadth of the experience, and I can already tell.
Yeah.
Like, the things you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
I totally know what you're talking
about. Right. So I've been playing, I've only been playing multiplayer because I bought this game for my brother because he had been playing multiplayer with a friend of his but didn't own the game.
Yeah.
So I bought it for him for his birthday. And we've been playing through a bunch of the multiplayer games. We've played through like 22 of them or something like that at this point. But you could definitely tell what game this game was an inspiration of and what things they improved on and what things they changed in order to make this other game. And then what's kind of neat is like they have made up stories about like how they came up with this concept and stuff and some of the history behind certain aspects of the games, which is just kind of neat. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So I think it's just a really interesting concept in games that people should at least look at.
I'm looking forward to that game coming to consoles because it's kind of perfect for consoles.
It is perfect for consoles.
It'll definitely sell a lot.
Yeah, very true.
Ellen, Joanna, did either of you play that game?
I have not.
No, okay. I don't think so.
Okay. Ooh, Ellen, I bet you would like it a lot.
I bet I would. It sounds like I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I will pass on. Hempily bullied me into playing it, so I will now bully the two of you to play it.
Yeah, play the game.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a pretty weak sauce bully, but you know.
what was it called again?
UFO 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then honorable mention is Puzmo, just because it's a good thing I can do in the morning. I can do some
crosswords. That was on my list last year.
It was. and I started playing it due to Mark's recommendation, and it's fun because it just got a lot of little puzzles that you can do in the morning. My favorite one is the one, it's called Weather Momoku or whatever.
That one's new.
Is it new?
It's only been around for a couple weeks.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I've been doing that one, I guess, for a couple weeks. And what I like about it is, like, you do the puzzle and then tells you the weather. So it's an excuse to look at the weather.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
That's hilarious.
I
like the way that service has evolved for the past year.
Because
it came out late last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah,
it's fun. A new game called Bongo, which is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to more stuff.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, Joanna, what you got?
I don't know. I love that idea
of
like taking something you can get for free and making you work for it. I don't know why. That's really funny.
That's true. It's just like
it's a peek into Steven's mind.
Yeah. It's an activity I do and I get rewarded with, a thing I could just look up.
there's even an app on your phone.
There's a widget on your home screen.
You can talk to your phone.
On your lock screen.
And get that
Why
info.
Am I like this?
The other thing you said that was really interesting was you mentioned like the 6th-gen console, like the 360, PS3 era stuff. And And I'm like, I feel like those games were really good, but then I'm like, oh, I kind of grew up with that, so am I just nostalgic?
Yeah, 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 I think that's a lot
of
it.
The two of you are both 32, we established earlier this evening. And it's like, the way you talk about the 360 era is like, oh, that's how I talk about like the Genesis.
Yeah, I'm aware.
It's just nostalgia.
Some of it is, a lot of it is nostalgia. I'm not going to lie. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
It was funny, but... okay, what am I doing?
You're a nicest.
You're nicest of the year.
Okay. Well, so I've only been playing a few games this year, and so what really that I keep going back to is Helldivers 2.
Okay.
Are you all played it or familiar?
I have not played it, but I am familiar.
Okay.
It was all the rage like a few months ago, right?
Yeah.
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 People went nuts for that game.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had a lot of fun with it. It's a co-op game. And so in that sense, it's really nice, but you can kill your teammates. And it's funny every time.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what makes the game so like interesting, I think. So like every time you call supplies down and it lands on someone and dismembers them, it's like, oh, it's funny. Even though it, you know, doesn't serve your interests and you have to call them back because you need them because you're being swarmed with enemies. You know, it's like almost like a wave rush type of game, but you move around and complete objectives. And well, there's different modes, but just the fact that you're always killing your teammates or being killed by them because someone called in a barrage that covers a huge area and you're like, no, don't call that in right now. And then you're dead. You know? And it's the explosions are beautiful and everything just blows up all the time. And so just graphically, you just feel like you're in a really comical war zone. And I don't know. It just fires on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And your honorable mention, you listed Breath of the Wild.
Oh, yeah. I've been revisiting it after realizing I wasn't creative enough for Tears of the Kingdom. I played it a bunch, and I just kept having to go to the underworld to grind out the Zonite so I could get supplies so I could be creative. And I wasn't that creative, and I didn't like going to the underworld because it was dark down there. And I know they give you tons of little light-up seeds.
Still.
And
Yeah.
And it's just like, and then everything's harder down there. And it's just like, I'm just trying to get currency so I can build stuff.
Yeah.
I got like at some point there's a suit that is full of light bulbs.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was made a little better. But I also hated going down there.
Yeah.
It was like, it made it like hard to see. I'm like, I get the mechanic here, but I'm bored of it. Like, I don't need to not know what's around the corner. Like, that's not interesting after the first or second time.
Yeah. I really like that area thematically.
Yeah.
But
I do agree with that.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like the twist of it more than the execution, I guess.
And if you weren't reading enough about the game realizing how big it was and then realizing it's the entire map.
Right.
That's a very cool thematic moment.
Yeah, but you can't see any of it because you can't climb up high and see any of it in the distance because it's so dim, even when you light stuff.
That's like a realization you don't, because that's actually, I will say that to its credit in a sense, because with the size of Breath of the Wild is revealed to you when you like go up to the first cliff edge and realize how big the world is, right?
That's a good moment.
No, I totally agree. And then in the underworld, it's when you look at the map and see the path, and in your head, you're like, how big is this?
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of experience.
Yeah.
And that's kind of
an oh no.
Well, yeah, it doesn't give you the same level of joy, and it certainly plays off of your sort of like fears of the unknown.
Right.
But it's that realization that like, oh, wow. I mean, if I was having more fun in that zone before I knew that, then that would have been a better thought to have.
Right.
But I do kind of like the sort of slow realization of, that this thing is even bigger. And it was immediately followed by like, ugh. But I still liked that.
All looks the same.
It does, yeah.
That's the problem. The overworld, at least, has all this variation in design, by region and stuff. I can't tell any difference in no matter where I am down there. Yeah.
You rely a lot more on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the goop tool, whatever it is, the Alter Hand.
Yeah, that's it.
That inspired you to go back to Breath of the Wild.
So the abilities in Tears of the Kingdom are terrific. And
oh my goodness, yes.
I'm going to say that it has higher highs and lower lows than Breath of the Wild.
Interesting.
And I think Breath of the Wild is more beginner friendly, and I'm definitely a beginner when it comes to games like that.
Okay.
I'm not like super great at games. And so I spend too much time making them. and so Yeah, I think the highs are higher. And there's moments when you're in the Sky Islands where you come across something and it's amazing and you're, you know, diving through little rings and stuff and doing all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, you cannot get that rush from Breath of the Wild. And so it's really at its best in those moments. Mm. But then you have to grind it out for Zone 8.
Yeah.
But I guess it'll be like 3 hours before I make it back up.
The only grind I'm willing to do is catching those horses. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Breath of the Wild, I will stalk them and get that fancy one if it takes me three days. But I don't care about getting... Well, I guess that's not true. Sometimes I liked cooking a specific thing, and I had to go find all the stuff for it. But
yeah. Oh, you actually liked cooking?
I did. It wasn't my... Like, it wasn't... I didn't get in nearly into it as some people did, but, like, it was fun. I don't know.
You hated it?
First of all, I don't remember things. So I'm like, oh, what is the recipe? And so I have all these like baking goods and I can never figure out how to bake anything with them. And I appreciated that like in Genshin, when you bake something, it's there forever, you know? And you're just like, boom, 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 auto bake. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's nice.
So in Tears of the Kingdom, there is, you actually can, if you have all the parts, you can put them all in your hand by selecting the recipe. It's like buried somewhere. I didn't figure it out for a long time either. But I also hated the cooking in that game.
Okay.
Basically because I hate crafting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's like I have enough. I organize junk drawers enough in my life. Like I don't.
Do you?
So many.
You want to talk about it?
Oh, you're waiting for me to answer that question.
Yeah, that was a serious question.
Yes, I'm very. I like what's called knolling. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I've never heard of
it. It's basically just like, it's what, if you're packing for a trip, this is a side tangent, everybody.
All right.
If you're like packing for a trip and you like have all the stuff you're going to bring, you lay it out on your bed in kind of like a bento box kind of layout just to get a good sense of what it is. And that's something that I do a lot when I'm like, when I make sure I have everything I need. I also like to tidy it in a thing to kind of like spatialize it in my mind. And also literally on the bed. But also that's what I do when I organize drawers and shelves and stuff. It's a prop, maybe. I don't know.
There's a word for taking everything out and putting it back up again.
I don't know if this is exactly it, but knolling is the is
wait.
The
are you refactoring
of...
your drawers?
Yeah, probably.
Oh my goodness.
It's applicable knowledge.
I love this podcast.
I'm gonna do an in-place drawer refactor.
I can't believe. Oh, that's amazing.
Uh huh. All right, folks, I'm looking at the books.
Yeah.
You may have remember, listener, that I got some books.
You got books?
I got it was a pile of receipts up to now, but now I've got books.
You got books.
And I'm saying this show needs money, folks.
It's Business Mark again.
I know. Business Mark has shown up.
He's back.
An appearance. And I've been looking at the books, is what I'm saying. I cannot emphasize enough.
Those books.
books. Accounting books.
Probably.
Some kind of books. So we need money, right?
You're holding them upside down.
Oh, that's my problem.
Oh, we're good. Never mind.
All right.
So let's just do a little brainstorming here in the middle of the show.
Yep,
might we be able to, I don't know, balance these books?
If we could get some more money somehow, but I don't know if there's a way we could do that.
Quintuple the number of ads.
Oh, no. I mean, we could do that.
A little inside baseball. That wouldn't help that much.
No.
If only there was a way for listeners to donate money.
All right, I'm canceling the bit.
Okay. Good.
Join us on Patreon.
Yes.
That's where we were headed.
Yeah, it is.
Patreon.com/NiceGamesClub.
Mm-hmm.
You can get ad-free episodes.
Yes.
So if we do ever quintuple those ads, you'll be free of that.
Thank goodness. There's an option.
Also, there's extra bonus content on there. But really, that's a great thing for you if you want to donate some money and get that any amount that you donate, any level, you'll get those benefits. But also, really, the real reason you want to do it is to keep the show going. It's to support the show.
Yes.
It's sort of our plea to you, our desperate end of year, balance these books, whatever. But you know what I mean. But you know why you would support a project. It's because you believe in it. And we hope that if you believe in what we do here, that you'll throw us some coin.
Yes.
And make it possible for us to book more guests and perhaps maybe even do better at social media and, and provide better infrastructure for the services we provide to support the show.
Yeah.
Maybe get some new microphones, which has been on the list for a while.
Yep.
We sound fine, but kind of need new microphones,
also,
guys.
Also, maybe I broke one, you know. Yeah.
we need, you know, child-proof shock mounts.
Some training, perhaps. So, yeah, if you go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub, we'd appreciate it. You can donate any amount, and it will help us out immensely.
Yeah. Joanna, what was that URL?
Nicegamesclub.
Patreon.com/nicegamesclub. I'll save you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
All right. First half of the show was about 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Second half of the show, what should we make it about?
Next year, 2025?
That is the future, yeah.
That's a really good idea, Steven.
Yeah, 2023 is in the past.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about our most anticipated games,
yes.
And we're going to talk about our game dev resolutions. So Ellen, you're first on this list once again, and you've got a bunch of stuff listed here.
Yeah, there's a lot.
What are your most anticipated? Tell us about it.
Metroid Prime 4.
Oh, dang.
Oh,
Metroid
right.
Prime yeah. 4.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I forgot that was the thing. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're like a 100% all Metroid, person. I thought you were like the 2D Metroids more.
I like all Metroids. I don't think I've actually played all of the games. Like, I've never really, I mean, there's just some that I haven't gotten to, and there's some that don't interest me. Like, I'm not really interested in playing Other M. Not interested.
Sure.
I mean, there's also like a Metroid Prime pinball.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's very different.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I really like the Metroid Prime games. I think the only one that I didn't finish Echoes because I think I just got had like a case of the stupid, or maybe I was really stressed out at the time and just couldn't get through some part of it. And by the time I remembered I hadn't finished it, Metroid Prime 3 was out, and that was amazing. So I just played that.
Yeah.
Metroid Prime 4. I'm so excited. Then I also read on
Can
some
you
others.
Explain the 3D Metroid games? Because I've never even seen gameplay of one.
Huh. Yeah. Oh. Well, it's, I mean, it's a similar kind of, like, you know, exploration of the environment, finding little secrets, getting secret upgrades.
Okay.
It's just, instead of a side scroller, it's first person, right? So the
they're not third person.
No,
it's first person.
Oh, okay.
That's what seems weird about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, Metroid is, you know, you're like, 3D, okay, but then like first person, really.
Yeah.
But the reason it's first person is because of how they handle exploration, which is that Samus has a scanning device.
Yes.
It's like a core mechanic of the Prime series. So the way you discover the world around you is by like actually scanning enemies and terrain. And I don't know this franchise super well, but I did play 3, and that is a really interesting take on a third person or a first person shooter. Is that you're not the verb? There's a lot of shooting,
yes,
but it's not the only or sometimes even the main thing you do.
Yeah.
In big stretches of that game.
Didn't No Man's Sky try the scanning thing?
Yeah, I guess there's some similar things.
Okay, totally different. Okay.
Metroid Prime.
And, I mean, other games have done something like that, but it's like a core.
Yeah.
It's a core mechanic of the Prime series. I'm not overstating.
No, I don't think. Well, and it's interesting because like Super Metroid had the X-ray vision, which was almost like a prototype of that, where like some of the secret passageways and something like you wouldn't be able to find them unless you were scanning with the X-ray, or you were so patient that you would test out every block of pixels. Which I admit
sounds
to.
Like you.
Yeah. At some point.
I remember you talking about Dread. You're like, just shoot all the walls.
Shoot all the walls. And that was like such a great kind of return to form, but like reimagine of that form. Like, it felt so good. But Metroid Prime, it captures a lot of the same feelings that you get from like a regular 2D side-scroller Metroid, but it does it with these different, you know, different mechanics a little bit, and it's fun to do it in the visor view of Samus. Feel pretty badass.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, I mean, there's like the last time I think honestly, when I first started playing the Metroid Prime games, I was doing it on like the Wii, and the Wii U, I think. So like using the wand was pretty awesome. I hope that they bring that back for the Switch because it had like aim assist little bit, but like it's still felt very immersive to be able to like shoot a bunch of things and get a power up and shoot that thing. And it was pretty great.
There was a time in history where people saw the Wii and were like, oh, that's going to be the best shooter console ever.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out to be that.
Yeah.
But like Metroid Prime did leverage that idea of having the pointer in a way that was pretty effective.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I thought so.
They looked at the Wii and thought that?
Okay. Oh, yeah. It was one of the first reactions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is in 2006 or whatever when they on E3 they revealed it. And they showed off a first-person shooter game of some kind. I don't know if it was... I don't think they had announced Prime 3 yet. And I think people were like, oh, that is what you need. You want, like, a pointer, but also a thumbstick so you can do... And, like, it ended up not just not being as good. And then the Wii was less... It wasn't the graphics powerhouse that the genre requires.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of developers tried it, but, like, they weren't able to give players what they expected.
It's also not as precise as you probably would want first-person shooter.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was essentially people's first reaction to the Wii, which is so weird when you think about, like, its place in history now. Yeah.
But precision is not very necessary in a Metroid Prime game because, like, you can just lock on and stuff. So
yeah, exactly. They had some pretty nice. I mean, you could dial that up and turn various lock features on and off to make it harder, or whatever. But it gave you all the tools you need to feel like an awesome, somewhat xenomorphic space bounty hunter.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to get that feeling back. I added a couple other ones to the list because they look really interesting. So there are a couple. Borderlands 4 might be coming out. Seen some good things. We'll see. I like blowing things up. It's a game about blowing things up, pretty much. So,
Cool.
You don't have to explain yourself.
No, that's it. Yeah. That's why it's on my list. Blow stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple interesting ones. So Winterboro is like a cozy survival game, and I really don't see how those two things can go together.
It's like the rat, or you play as a mouse or a rat or something. It's really cold.
Certainly the graphics look cozy, but like I'm very curious. I mean, first the graphics look, just the art style is so cute and amazing and beautiful. I'm gonna give it a try just for that alone, but like I'm really interested to see how the word cozy gets to apply to survival, because I do not put those things together in my head at all. Like when I'm curled up on a blank with a blanket and a hot cocoa and a book or a game on my couch with my dogs next to me, I'm not like, yes, surviving.
Wait, does Don't Starve count?
That's a survival. I guess maybe. I don't know. Some people may consider that survival.
Yeah.
Or I mean cozy.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel like Animal Crossing is a survival game, and it stresses me out.
Yeah.
I guess, but I'm weird.
I don't know. I guess I'm just very sensitive to any risk of my characters dying. So like, if there's any of that, then it's like if we're in that kind of situation that I'm not in a cozy mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
you're interested in trying it out.
Yeah. Though. Yeah, for sure. And then there's also this game called Fragpunk, which is like 5-person PvP. Like first person PvP kind of thing. And it's usually not my style of game that I'm interested in because I just do not have the time or the sustained interest to become good at those games. And I think it's hard, and at least for me, psychologically really difficult to engage in something that I know I will never be good at.
Yeah.
The rounds or the sessions for this game are like 2.5 minutes. So really, really short. I like that. I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah. That's cool.
So we'll see what happens there. And then two more to mention. Rift of the Necrodancer is supposed to come out in 2024. And I played the heck out of Crypt of the Necrodancer. This one looks a little different, so I'm a little not sure how that's going to play out. But definitely excited to give it a try. At least the soundtrack will be
awesome. I think Rift of the Necrodancer is a proper rhythm.
Yeah, that's
as far as I understand.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing. It's like it's kind of like, you know, you've got like your four bars and you've got your different notes and rhythms, but instead of like just the markers are little creatures. So I don't know. We'll have to see. And then the last one on my list is Lunar. So Lunar is an older game and Eric adores it. So I'm just excited for that to come out because a remastered collection is coming out for Lunar.
Yeah.
Oh. And he, honestly, he didn't know about it until I told him. And he was like, so I like to be able to surprise Eric sometimes. So I'm excited for him to get his hands on that. Speaking of nostalgia.
Cool.
Okay. That's...
I'm up next.
Yeah.
And I kind of struggled with this because I was like, there's definitely a dozen games that I was excited for, and like games I played this year, I forgot all of them.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of like rack my brain, like what were them? And so the only ones that came through were like the bigger ones. And so Civ 7, is, I think, something I'm really excited about, mainly because what I want to do is I want to have a bunch of people here at the office to do like a 10-player game.
Okay.
Like on like a LAN party. Like, you know,
that's going to take all day.
We'll make nachos and cheese.
Yeah. I guess it's a LAN party, so it's going to take all day. That's how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that sounds, I mean, we'll see if it's any fun. But like, and so I'm looking forward to that. That said, I don't know that I want anything out of a Civ game that, you know what I mean? I think the the Civ faithful, I think, are different than I am in terms of what they like about the game.
Okay.
I don't really care about playing all the different civilizations. I kind of just want to play Civ. I don't really want to optimize or...
It's going to be kind of hard to do that anyways, because Civ 7 is weird or different, I guess, in the way that it works now.
Yeah, like,
because there's different eras. Yeah, you
change civilizations per era, and there's three. So I like a lot of the choices they're making, and I like that idea that hopefully will get me more engaged in what's different about the different civilizations, especially as you mutate them through.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of worried that what's going to happen to me with all the Civ games, I'm just going to pick my play style and never change it.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm happy doing that.
Yeah, that's fine.
I just don't want the game to punish me for doing that. I hope it doesn't.
Okay.
That said, I'm also happy just to lose every game of Civ I play, so maybe that's fine.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to that, mainly to play with friends, because that was a fun part. The fun pandemic memory of playing Civ 6 a lot.
Good times.
And it was already an old game by then, but like, these games have longevity, which means this game, presumably, if it doesn't crash and burn or is rejected by its fan base, will be around a long time, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. The other one on here, the only other like proper game I could even think of is, again, something just I remember seeing about recently is Star Trek Ascendancy, which is a big board game, a big 4X game that takes all day, speaking of taking all day, that we've talked about in the show a lot.
Yeah.
We've been playing this game since before the show started.
Yes.
It came out in the I just remember that because it came with an extra set of cards called the 50th Anniversary Pack, and I know the 50th anniversary of Star Trek 2016. They kept releasing new factions for it, which was really fun, and every time they did, I'd get them, and then we'd play a couple more games. But they take all day, and so you really can't make it a regular thing unless you have a really dedicated group to make it a regular thing. And so it really seemed like they were done with it, and they could continue selling it, and it'd be great, but they were done developing it. Turns out, no, they're adding the Gorn to the game, which is kind of interesting, a whole new faction. And they're also streamlining the rules. It's like a second edition almost. And what they're going to do is they're selling a – I think this is just aimed at folks like me who bought all the factions over the years.
Yeah.
Is they're selling like a – they call it the Final Frontier, and it's like all the updated rule sets, replacing pieces that need to as a result. If you don't own any of this stuff already, includes every expansion – plus the new Gorn, which makes for, could be like an 11 to 12 player game of this. It was designed for three.
Yeah.
And like three players already takes 8 hours. Like, it's wild that they even, anyway. But if you do already own all that stuff, it just all the extra things, the new Gorn, and then also like a box to hold it all in.
Yeah.
Like, which is something that if you, I mean, I'm not like, I don't play a lot of board games with a lot of expansions, but it's like it's a perennial problem in that industry because expansions are so common.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people 3D print solution custom cases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a weird, I really thought like they'd wrung all they could out of this thing, and they just decided like, no, we're actually going to give you everything you've ever wanted and a little bit more. And so that's coming out early next year. I'm kind of excited about it. Mainly, I think what will happen is I'll get it, we'll play three games, and then that'll maybe be the end of it.
Probably, yeah.
But, like, I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. It's more Star Trek.
Those are fun days when we get together, even if we don't finish a game.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing that.
I am tepidly, I don't think that's the right word, but I'm going to use it, tepidly curious about it. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm more interested in the streamlined rules.
Yeah.
One of the main things.
Yeah, me too.
This is not listeners who don't know this game, but there's a thing in the game called projects, which is just you upgrade your abilities as your player, and you do that by your science modules or in the planets you have can launch projects, and then you research them by giving them science tokens until you have enough to do it.
Yeah,
and they're changing that entirely. Whereas you now draw cards, and instead of placing them on the table in front of you, and then over the course of 3 to 5 turns, which takes forever, like slowly working your way up to it. You can just pay for it immediately.
Now. Yeah.
And it's a totally streamlined system that should make games more variable and move a little faster, which is nice.
That's
it
true.
Removes some of the watching what other people are doing.
Yes.
But there's so much meta in the game that, like, it's hard to, like, well, that person has this one, but I don't know if they're going to get that this turn or next turn, or they're going to get the other thing. And then that player's got that, and then how that interacts with what I've got, which can, like, that's just so complicated that I don't think anybody does it. Maybe some people do, but this game removes that ability to think more strategically, but I never engage with that anyway. So like, I'm kind of happy for them streamlining that. And that's the only thing they've really talked about, but they promised there will be more updated rules. So I'm just fascinated as a designer for no other reason, just to see, because I know that game so well and how it works, and I know the strategies and the meta of it generally, that I'm really interested to see how that changes. Will it make a four or five player game less daunting and less epic? Because that would be great.
Yeah.
Will it make playing with the Borg more fun? Because you're spending less time trying to outwit the other players, and everyone can really go against the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm fascinated because the game has collected many rules over the years with all its expansions. I guess it's sort of, rather than collapsing under its own weight, they're designing something for all 10 factions in a way they never did when they started the game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm interested.
You know what's crazy is there's probably some person at whatever company's behind that that's also just as thrilled as you are. Like, yes, I got everything I wanted out in this game.
Yeah. That's true.
Because that never happens. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Some designer somewhere is very happy.
Yeah.
That is the dream.
And then the last thing is there's going to be a new Switch, new Nintendo console.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know anything about it yet, really.
But we should learn about it before March.
Yes.
Before the fiscal year ends.
Yep. So we'll see.
Yeah.
That's on my list too.
I mean, because I've got some games coming out next year. So like, I'm kind of curious. Like, but one of the things we do know about the Switch 2 is it will be fully backwards compatible. That's the fashion of the time.
We
and I'm glad
that.
Nintendo made sure to make a statement saying that they will do that. Because that actually impacts like literally their like financial projections.
Yeah.
Which means that when the Switch 2 comes out, there's gonna be a couple of Switch games, like indie games especially. Like cheap games that people are going to want to buy and that will be available to them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of indie developers are going to get a little bit of a boost with the newer install base.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, that also means that people who already own those games will be able to continue playing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get new sales, but there's going to be a whole bunch of new people looking in the store, and a lot of us have games in that store right now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting, especially if you've always wanted to. I mean, we put out. The Switch was a year plus old when we just satchel on there, and it felt like it got in there pretty early. That was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of interesting. This will be the first time I'll have had a game, multiple games, that will be available on a new console.
Yeah.
Just by happenstance. But like,
you take those.
It's exciting.
Yeah. That's cool.
And I got new stuff coming out this year, and I know I want to get access to the dev kits and stuff like that. I'm just excited about that. But at the same time, you know, I'm not making AAA experiences. I can just keep shipping Switch games, and there are Switch 2 games, which is exciting.
That is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be cool. I got a list.
Yep.
Dragon's Dogma 2 DLC.
Uh-huh.
That's cheating. It's not really a game, and it hasn't even been announced, but...
Wait, is this a wish?
You're anticipating it now?
Yeah.
You know, when Martha was a regular host, she put, what was it?
Ooblets on there?
On her most anticipated... Every
for
year
like
for 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
And then it finally came out, and then she forgot to put it on her nicest.
Yes! It was so funny.
So, but she did love that game.
Yeah, she did. But yeah.
I'm saying there's no rules.
Yeah, I can do what I want. I'm anticipating DLC for Dragon's Dogma 2,
because
I think it sold well, at least when it first came out. So I think they might make some more stuff for it. I hope they do. Because I would like there to be a hard mode, so I could play it longer. Also, I put on this list Civilization 7, mostly because, like, when I played Civ 6, it was old, like Mark was saying. Or when I started playing it, it was old. And so I'm interested to see what it's like to play a Civ game at the start.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, like, and I also can't really say that I'm a Civ fan. I'm just a Civ 6 fan because it's the only game I've played. Mm-hmm. And they're all so different from one another, as at least all of the people online keep complaining about. So
they're not that different.
Yeah, I guess. So I'm really curious to see how this one plays out.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to look to you because you know Civ 6 better than I do.
Sure.
Like, you like way better.
Oh,
than
yeah. I mean,
you've played it more,
played
but also you've engaged with more of its like core mechanics that I just sort of like don't bother with.
I would like watch YouTube on like, this is just a dude playing the game.
So I'm looking to you to know more about like how Civ 7, its relationship with that, what's, how it changes and evolves from Civ 6. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on it.
When it was first announced, like, they released some footage of it, and I watched that footage, and I haven't really thought about it since. So, but the footage seemed intriguing, at the very least. So, yeah, I'm interested. Mm-hmm. And then also Switch 2 stuff, because that means there's a new Kirby game coming at some point.
Oh.
And I'm a huge Kirby fan.
Yeah.
So,
speaking of anticipating things that you have no reasonable expectation of ever happening.
Yeah, so You know, it's really fascinating. One of these games is actually coming out, Civ 7. The other two games might exist. I don't know. It's fine.
How reliable is a Kirby release? Because I know there are many, many Kirby games.
Yeah.
Isn't that just weighted by the fact there were so many DS and 3DS games?
Yeah, a lot of them came out on handheld consoles. Switch is kind of handheld. Switch 2, as far as I know, is also handheld. I don't really.
Right.
I have not looked at any rumors. I'm just going to wait for Nintendo to be like, this is actually what it is. Till I actually know what it is.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, yeah, I guess on console, Kirby games don't come out super frequently. But since the Wii, there's been a new Kirby game on each console, at least one. Mm-hmm. Switch had two. It had Star Allies and Forgotten Land. So I'm anticipating there being something, but I don't know if it's going to come out at launch. I just think it'll come out at some point.
Sure,
that's
sure.
my thinking.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. I should have really just put Kirby Switch game instead of Switch 2 stuff, because like I'm sure there are other Switch 2 stuff. I'm honestly,
but who cares if there's a Kirby game coming?
Yeah. Well, unless it's Smash, then I'm excited about that too.
Well, didn't Sakurai announce he's working on something and we don't know what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see. It's probably Smash. I'm actually kind of a little.
He doesn't know how to do anything else.
I'm a little concerned about that because I just feel like
could be another Kid Icarus.
He could. Actually, that'd be something.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. I'm a little concerned about Sakurai because, like, you know, he almost kills himself working on these games every time they come out. So I'm like, oh. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
That's my list.
Okay.
Joanna. What are you most anticipating?
I've been anticipating Paralives for a while.
Okay.
Like a long while. And, you know, there hasn't been, well, I guess there's competition in the life sim space now, but for the longest time it was just the Sims, and
right.
you would play the Sims and you would like it type of thing, and give EA lots of money.
Yeah.
And so it's refreshing to see somebody really building something with a lot of like spirit and love and care going into it, and their dev blogs are pretty interesting and stuff. Or
cool.
I guess they're updates that they put out, yeah.
At the very least, they'll have very fun patch notes because The Sim is littered with those. So I can't imagine Paralives will be any different.
I mean, if they are looking to sort of leverage that community, then they'll probably want to deliver a lot of things that community expects.
Yeah.
That's reminds me a little bit of like City Skylines. Like,
yeah.
EA thought they could do whatever they want with SimCity because there wasn't a competitor, and then they released a crappy SimCity. And then, like, someone else swooped in because, you know, other people know how to make games, you know. Mm-hmm. So
right. Turns out.
Yeah.
So is a lot of the anticipation from like disaffected Sims players, or is that just a part of it?
I can't speak for the community because I've only just like barely had my eye on it, but I'm just like, someday this is going to drop and I'll get to play with it because, you know, life Sims, it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of frustration with the restrictive build tools in The Sims, and I've watched a bunch of Sim YouTubers just build beautiful things, and it's amazing how they work around the limitations. But to see what Paralives is doing, where they've just engineered these amazing build systems and stuff, it's just going to unlock a whole new like level of what people can create with it. And so I think people are excited about that. I think the art style that they've embraced is almost a little bit cartoony. It's really nicely done. I think that's going to I think people resonate with that, and I certainly like it, and that plus just like the quality of engineering going into it, I think it's setting it up to make it really hope, and hopefully I'm not wrong about this, and like whenever it does finally come out, maybe next year, you know, it comes out and it's like, oh whoops, not what we expected, but hopefully, you know, it lives up to all these cool ambitions that I and others have for it.
Cool. Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it, but I'm gonna look at it.
Okay.
Because I like those type games, but it's been a long time since I've engaged them, and I think it's just because I've just fallen out of favor. But I'm like, I like that stuff, so I need to give it another look.
You don't want to simulate your life inside a little.
I definitely was like in high school. I was definitely one of the person like make your neighborhood.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, which is I think everybody's first idea, but. But I really did like that sort of thing.
That's wild. Cool. I never would do that. I don't want to be in a visual, in a virtual. But when I play games, I don't like being myself in a game. Mm. So that's why I would never do that. Yeah. The Sims and other games like that, I've always appreciated reading articles about.
Sure.
More so than playing them themselves. So I'm really excited. I'm really interested in it. And also just a Sims competitor is good.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
And maybe this, I mean, I don't know, Joanna, this sort of speaks to what you say you're interested about it, which is just like how it's put together and its systems and like that really that hits me as well. I would love to, if not play this game, read about how it's made.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, we're a small fraction of the actual audience.
Yeah.
You know, game developers are going to appreciate it for the cool systems and stuff going into it. Because when you're sitting there watching them, they're like, oh, yeah, you can build curved walls. And you're watching these tools. You're like, holy moly, that's a lot of work.
Mm. Yeah.
And they nailed it. Like, it looks beautiful in the videos and everything. I don't know if that's going to be everybody's takeaway. I think everybody will appreciate that.
Right.
But, you know, we're especially dazzled by that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, also, I mean, this is something that, like, The Sims sort of calcified what it was before this modern era, where people are going to not just, they're going to play the game and they might not engage with a lot of those deeper tools, but then they're going to watch a lot of streams and YouTube content where people do that, or they're going to download user creations if that's a system it has, and they'll get that out of it. There'll be the community of that kind of sharing, I think, will probably leverage a lot of those things, even if it's just a small percentage of actual players really doing it. I mean, a lot of people will experience it in some manner.
Yeah, I think these kind of things are great because they get picked up by like actual artists and architects and designers and people with natural talent for that, or people who put the work in. And then if the game is done well, then it gives your average player like me the sort of power fantasy of like, oh, I'm designing this beautiful home. And then I look at it a week later, I'm like, wow, that's tacky. You know, but at the moment, I'm like, I'm an award-winning landscaper.
Well, I just want to like make my apartment building, but I just want to put a spiral staircase in. It's really all I want out of a thing like this.
Your corporate art, you know.
I just want reality with a little fantasy.
Like, yeah. You want to build just plain, you know, corporate office buildings. And
I mean, you know, if it's you know, laid out nicely, you know.
If it's functional,
yeah,
is what I'm hearing. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our list for anticipated, but that's not all we have to talk about for the next year. Let's end the show on New Year's game dev resolutions. Now, this is always a little tricky part of the program.
Yeah.
And Joanna, you're spared of this because we're going to talk about what we resolved to do last year.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to slap our foreheads.
Yep.
And like, oh, maybe we didn't get that done. And I'm not looking at this to know if that's true or not. We're going to find out.
Okay.
But let's hear from Ellen first.
I feel like I've had the exact same resolution for like 3 years, which is get better friends with Godot. Now we're just acquaintances.
Well, now we have Joanna here to really stare you down and make sure that happens.
Yeah. My other secondary goal was overall do less work and make more stuff. Neither one of these things happened. Like the opposite happened. I had less time to make stuff. I had more time spending working. It just kind of all, I don't know, flipped over. So I'm just going to pivot to something else, and I'm just going to say, all right, this is the year I'm finally going to do my portfolio site. I'm going to do it this year for sure. No other goals.
Nice.
That's no exciting. Other goals. That's the only one. So
what do you have? Oh boy. I realize these are resolutions and, you know, really part of the reason why you make a resolution so you don't have to do it. But, do you have plans, for your portfolio site?
Yes. Do it.
Anything that you're like, okay.
Yeah, Steven, come on.
Yes.
Of course. I should have known. I mean, arguably, like, a portfolio site could be you made a Threads account or something like that.
Oh, no.
Like an Instagram.
I'll probably have it on a domain that I already own, and then probably break it down into a couple of different sections that are more like instructional design, instructional strategy, and then more like just game stuff. That's kind of where I want to leave my goals for now. Because I don't want
to.
I'll let the scope creep come to me naturally.
Are we all sitting on domains we own that we hope to use someday?
I don't have any of those. You know, I
have a domain that I have all my work from like a decade ago on.
Yeah,
like in a different field.
Yeah,
which is that needs to spruce up as well.
Okay,
but you're sitting on one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like Ellen is. Yeah.
Nope, I don't have one. That's how I like it. Maybe to my detriment, frankly. So all right, that makes sense, Ellen. That's a good goal.
All right.
I'm next. My 2024. I wanted to get Dream Settler out. That didn't happen. But I'm not taking any blame for that.
Yeah, it's not your fault.
Not my fault. It's a team. It's a team effort.
Yep.
We missed that deadline as a group.
Yeah.
We've got a sort of a new schedule now for this company. We wanted. I mean, it's not a big secret. We want it out this upcoming year.
Yeah.
We'll see. We've got plans for the spring that to sort of like do some public announcements and try to re-engage with the sort of audiences anticipating the game. We'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But again, this is not all on me, so I don't feel so bad, even though I feel like I like me making this resolution, I'm like, well, then that means something. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
This unannounced project that I talked about earlier, that I've talked about on the show before, that is almost certain it will come out.
Okay.
It's coming along really well. I'm really excited about it. It will be announced, and then it will be released probably a couple months later.
Okay. Well, then add that to my list for this year, things I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is frustrating to want to talk about it without being able to talk about the details.
Yeah.
But, and I've done this before on the show, but like, this is one of those things where the, like I talked about with platformers that get me going, like it's the mechanics of the game really match up with the content and the theme and like the message it has for its players in a way that is discoverable. And so the more you engage with it, the more I've never worked on anything more where the medium is the message. And maybe that's cryptic. That will make a lot of sense when you know more about this project. Mm. But where the actual structure of it is a big part of how you feel about it and how it comes to you.
Cool.
It's very narrative heavy.
Yeah.
And so it which gives it the affordance to be able to do that more than a less narrative game does. It's hard for a platformer to be as good as Little Big Planet in this way. So, you know, it's not... so it has that going for it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it. And partly because Dream Settler has been a really long development cycle, it's really cool that this is going to be coming out sooner than that, which is wild that that's the case.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about it.
Cool.
Also, and this is like a missed one for this year, but it started before I did resolutions last year, so I kind of don't get any negative points for this.
Okay.
But I've talked about Operators on the show before, my mobile game that I was working on, that I've been working on. And my goal was to release it this year, mm-hmm. and I set that goal on the program, just not in a nicest episode. So that's my technical reason for being okay that it's going to miss the deadline. I've still got a month left. Listeners are hearing this near Christmas, but we've got December just started.
If you don't get it done, Mark, if you don't get it done, you're going to have to face the consequences.
Yeah.
The consequences of not following through.
Honestly, the consequences are that it's still on my plate.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah.
I made a ton of progress on it over the summer.
That's good.
And thing that I talked about my schedule in many episodes past. I worked on it one day a week, and that day just got squeezed. To the point where it doesn't need a lot more work, but it just needs a little bit more work.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of resolving to like not take the. It's just on my plate now, which is frustrating. So it's going to be an official resolution for this year, which as we know means nothing. but I want to get that game out. That is just, again, just to get it off my plate. Again, be more familiar with the mobile publication workflow, which it's been a long time since I've done that.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of a bummer, but, I'm going to give it another go. Let's see. It's not out by June. Then it's definitely because I forgot about it. Because it is not going to take a lot of work,
sure.
Frankly, on that one. And then I don't have it on my list here because I kind of forgot it. But like Noble Engine, I talked about it a lot last year about wanting to sort of get more done with it. I think I'm comfortable. People are really using it. They're shipping games with it. They're happy with it. I get bug reports every now and again.
Yeah.
People are submitting like, how do I do this in like the Discord channel devoted to it on the Playdate Squad Discord. And other people are answering their questions. So I'm kind of pretty comfortable letting that handle itself for a while. Okay. I think I want to, release structure, so it doesn't have like a version number, but I would like to give it a stamp at some point so people can start like locking their games on a certain version. Cause I think that's really important but right now it's still technically pre-release, in that sense, even though people are using it, shipping games with it. I want to do all that stuff, but I'm like, it's going fine and people like it and are using it and are helping each other use it. And so it's not asking much of me right now. So, like, I'm being mature about it with all the other things on my plate and being like, okay, unless an emergency happens, bug report rolls in, or a feature request too good to say no to, I'm going to just, it's super maintenance mode at the moment.
Okay.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
The other thing I talked about last year is I wanted to get get these SDK environments for consoles and stuff going, just get more familiar with that. And I did do that.
Okay.
Nice. And that's going to. And I did do that, and then I haven't thought about it in a couple of months.
But you did.
Now I did it. Now I got to do it again because I got some stuff to release.
Okay.
And we'll that's going to be coming up again for me. So I'm glad I did it last year because I refreshed myself, even though I didn't publish any console games this year.
Yeah.
And then the big last thing is related to Nice Games Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got to write some grants. We got to get the money. We got to ask people for cash. And dear listener, we ask you for some money when we ask you to join the Patreon. And this is separate from that. It's not a for-profit thing for me. It's something to fund our community events. And it also, I believe, has a better chance of raising more money, mm-hmm. Not just because of what it is, but because of the work that we've done over the past many years, making a really robust community here in the Twin Cities. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be some work. Mm-hmm. We want to try to put on, I talked about it last year, that we want to put on an event. And this is one of the reasons why we formed an organization, to be able to pay for that. And but now rubber's meeting the road. Got to actually do it.
Yeah.
So that is, it's going to happen, I guess. I got help, though.
Yeah.
Beth Korth, who's been on the show a bunch of times, she and I are working together to make sure a lot of this happens. And she's been a great leader in for our local chapter and great. She's really helped me keep perspective on it. And she knows what I'm good at. And so she knows what I should do and what she should do.
Yeah.
And so we're a good team. And so I talk about this like we did this, but like the we have names. And right now it's a 4-person board. It's myself and Beth, and then Trent, who has been on the show, talk about Mega Games.
Yep.
And then Sam, who is another board member for the IDGA chapter, who's also on the board for this. And the four of us are we're the ones responsible for it now. But now that it's real, we have to really do it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's that.
Cool. I got a list again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a list. I always make like little statements, which makes it easier to say if I did it or not. So last year, for some reason, I said I would look into other engines to work with.
I wonder if Joanna has any suggestions.
But you know what to do.
That was last year, though. This is a new year, so.
in your last.
Then roll over.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the year isn't over yet, technically, but. I didn't look into any engines, obviously.
Yeah.
And honestly, Godot probably would have been the one that I looked into. I think
you had already taken a tour around a bunch of different
a little bit, yeah.
systems prior to that.
So I did some peaks, but that was like, that's not the same. And then the year before that, I remember I said I wanted my life to be less hectic and more like in control. I don't remember the exact phrasing I used. But I think I overcorrected, and I feel like I feel like I've kind of stagnated a little bit in terms of like being active and doing things. For this year, for next year, I'm saying that I want to play more games. I definitely have noticed that I don't play many games anymore, which I guess it just happens when you make games and you get older. I like games, and I want to continue to like them. So I want to play some more. So I remember why I like them. But I also want to just do more things.
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean? But just more stuff.
You could learn Godot. You could pitch Roboston to board game publishers.
Okay, I didn't mean work. Those are good examples.
Go to theme parks? But seriously, what actually are you thinking that you'd want to do more of?
I have gravitated much more towards my apartment and just like staying in my apartment, and doing things in my apartment. And I think part of that reason is because like lockdown was hard and I'm readjusting again to regular life. I've been, at least the past couple of weeks, I've been trying to like get out of my apartment every day. Because I think that's important. And it's really easy to just like when you're working from home, you don't really have a reason to leave your apartment to just stay in your apartment.
Yeah.
So I don't want that to be the case. So I'm trying to be outside more. It's been nice to have like Star Trek nights when we have the Thursdays, cause that's a good excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough, cause that's once a week thing.
All right. We have to have more Star Trek nights per week, I guess. 2 or 3. Is that enough? We can do 4.
Mark is so excited. We're not going to get enough people to come out for that. I just want to not be in my apartment. I guess I should be more clear then. I should say I don't want to be in my apartment. Do stuff outside of my apartment.
Okay.
More often.
You want to be more social. You don't mean that you need to be more productive.
Yeah, yeah. No. I've tried that several times.
Or anything?
No, I don't necessarily want more hobbies, but I do want to just do I guess be outside more. And it's not even necessarily social. But yeah. Just like if I go for a walk for 15 minutes, you know, like that would be something.
That's a tough week to make that resolution because it's 5 degrees out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I decided to do this now instead of, you know, 3 months ago when it was nicer. But, oh, well, that's my life.
Hey, so it goes.
There's no bad weather, only bad gear.
Okay.
That's not true, but
yeah,
it's something I tell myself when I need to go outside.
It's a great lie.
Yeah.
That's what you tell. Okay.
Yeah.
That's-
yeah.
I think that would be true if we had like the suits they have in Dune. You know?
Yeah. All right, Jana, you're the last one on the list.
I think so. So just a little background. I'm sort of the organizer of the grassroots Godot and C# community, and I also release a bunch of tools for Godot and C# to kind of. What I like to think of is like helps with some of the more boring stuff of game development. And so I have a demo game that I maintain that uses all that stuff and a little platformer that shows things off, but it's largely based off of other people's assets and gameplay. And so what I'm really hoping to do over the next few months is work on a new game demo that will showcase more stuff. And then also let me finish up another project I've been working on, which is, virtualizing, you know, input. Input management is actually notoriously tricky when you get into it with a game, when you start dealing with multiple controllers and then, you know, the ability for one player to have more than one controller with, like, the Switch and stuff like that, and disconnecting and connecting and then keyboard and mouse and juggling all that, and then you might want abstractions like holding a button down or a quick tap and stuff like that. And when you try to implement all that by hand, you just end up with, you know, tons and tons of code that just goes on forever. And so I've come up with something that I think will help with some of that, that sort of lets you work in terms of, and I don't think this is particularly original. I've just put in a lot of work to bring it over, but it's basically, you know, lets you declare things in terms of like a virtual controller and what that's assigned to. You don't particularly care. And so it'll sort of, handle all of that with you in a more robust, systematic way than maybe the engine itself will, and allow you to assign controllers to players as well as assign roles to controllers and things like that, then do selective matching and declare your input maps in code and easily serialize them and things like that, and just take all of that off your plate in a way that's a bit more robust than the default stuff you get out of the box with Godot and
that's
stuff like
cool.
that.
For Unity devs, it sounds like it's the Rewired of Godot, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but like it's the go-to when you want to add
controller
everything
you've
support.
Described is something. There's a third-party tool in Unity called Rewired that is that you should probably take a peek at.
I'm going to take a peek at it
because
now,
I think
you.
The biggest challenge of something like that is actually designing the API surface.
Yeah.
I mean, I say that's the biggest challenge. It's probably not the biggest challenge, but like it is. Logically understanding that idea of like multiple controllers for players, abstracting to actions rather than buttons, like stuff like that, and everything you've talked about is something that's plagued every platform. And even Unity tried to like make something. They have a newer input system these days. It's not as good as this third party tool.
Yeah.
In my opinion, anyway.
I appreciate you sharing that with me because. It's so funny because I've heard Rewired, but I didn't go look at it.
Yeah.
And what's funny is it's like I've been kind of in the dark and I've reinvented a lot of this stuff, which tells me that maybe I've got the idea right.
Yeah.
But it's like 80% done.
I think that is a good sign that you did because a lot of this and now you will have the opportunity to innovate and use Rewired as example now that as you begin the work on it. But I think from what you've described, like you are really on the right track.
Yes.
And that's, I'm really excited about that.
Oh, cool. Thank you. That's what you told me about serialization and it ended up working out. So that's a really good sign if I have Mark's blessing.
Well, if you need to be big upped at any moment, just, you know, give me a ring and I'll.
Yeah. And the best part is like this input work I've been working on for months. It's like 80% finished.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so it's there, it's working. And there's some pieces that need to be built out, but the design is done.
Nice.
And so I'm really curious. Now I'm going to go look at Rewired and I'm going to go see if there's anything I can improve on and sort of borrow from it. But chances are it's, you know, what I've come up with is probably very close, I imagine.
That's cool.
Based on what you're describing. So that's really exciting. And yeah, I'm really hoping it helps people. But that's one of the harder parts, and it should help you build input remapping screens.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's
give
a big
those
benefit.
Bindings and stuff that are very easy to use, and yeah. So you can just hook them up to your UI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome.
I think one of the problems that Rewired solves, but it's a paid asset, and so not you don't see it in as many games as you should see it, is that there's just tons of games that don't have controller support, mm-hmm. like indie games, itch games, games where asking the developer to do all of that work is just too much when they're just trying to make a small project. And so what you end up having is you have a lot of players who, like, they played a Nintendo, they know how video games work, but they're not an audience for a lot of these games, and they should be. And I think that hurts the culture of video games, because you have a lot of people who are players who want to pick up a controller and play, and they don't see indie games as an option for them because so many of them don't have controller support. Mm. And that's not because those developers are really into mouse and keyboard necessarily. It's just because the door is a little bit, it's not quite as open.
Yeah.
And so, especially for the Godot community, for where, like, you know, that is, it's growing and it's very focused on smaller indie developers. And I know that the target is a wider range of developers, but right now a lot of its boosters are folks who are, you know, clever and doing new things and having an easier access to what is ultimately this sort of commoditizing, you know, tooling that can open the audience to, so you don't have to make the effort to, like, what buttons do I press on this keyboard to this platformer game, which is just a no-go for huge amounts of people. So I'm thrilled that you're endeavoring to solve this for the Godot community. That's fantastic.
I have thrown all, you know, my entire effort and focus behind it. And it will be open source, you know, MIT, available at Chickensoft, which is https://chickensoft.games, where all the other, you know, open source packages live.
That's chickensoft.games.
Thank you, Mark. And so, yeah, I'm very excited about it. But yeah, this next demo is to showcase that, hey, input doesn't have to suck, because the last demo was, hey, serialization doesn't have to suck.
Yeah.
And this one will have, you know, a little bit more built out UI. It'll have, you know, graphic settings and stuff like that. And
I was going to call you a cheater because you got so much of your input system, like you said, 80%. But your goal, your resolution is the demo to show it off. And
yeah.
Yeah. And we talked
about
that
last week. Well, I have to
dog
food it to finish the library, actually. I actually have to have a real game and a real use to really make sure this thing works.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what the second demo is for. Because hooking all that up to the last demo was going to be a bunch of work. And I was like, that would be work better spent on a whole new demo, which will use the new Chickensoft chicken, which you can also download because it was commissioned and it was great. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm thrilled. Everyone should be thrilled.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chickensoft.games.
All right. Last thing. Should be very short. What are we working on in 2025? Alan, what you doing?
I already said
what you did and what you doing.
Yep. I already said it.
Oh.
You know, I'm going to make that
doing
portfolio
the
site. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go. Yep. Let's go.
Squarespace or...
We'll see. I had a Squarespace site, and I don't know, it seemed kind of spendy for what I was getting. I'll re-look into it, though, you know, so maybe.
If you want it done, you know, paying for those services, great.
Yeah.
Because then you can just knock it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. Like, I hate to recommend that to people because it isn't, the value for dollar is not high.
No.
But at the same time, there's a lot of value to not having to do any of it yourself.
Right.
A lot of that stuff. It's a huge amount of value to, like, not need to learn how to, like, SSH to a Linux server is just...
Cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
It's a huge pain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pay for someone else to learn it and do something with it.
Yeah.
Basically. And that's what, you know, that's what the... Yeah, so I'll probably end up doing that. I didn't have...
I mean, if it works, it works.
There's no shame in that.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't have learn, you know, web hosting on my list for 2025. So it sounds like what you described is going to be the plan.
Cool. I see Robustin is also on your list here?
Yeah, well, that's for Hiatus, but we can loop that into the same answer. So Hiatus is coming up,
okay.
And there's, you know, I think a bunch of stuff that we need to look at with the show, but one of the things I did want to spend some time on over the next month or so is that Robustin review of the rules, because it's
cool.
Been on my list for a couple months and just haven't had the energy to get to it between work stuff. So,
That's fair.
It'd be good.
Awesome. Mark, what you doing? What you did? What you doing?
I'm working on the same as last year. I wrote last year that I was working on Dream Settler and Unreal Engine and then planning larger events for the IDGHTC folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was talking about. And that is what I did last year. And all that's ongoing, except for this new project
that
came up in the middle of last year. and operators, which I saddled myself with for some reason. So just keep on.
Keep on keeping on. Yeah, okay.
Maybe be better at organizing it, but like, I feel like I'm in an okay place. Looking forward to the new year.
Cool. I'm also doing the exact same thing. I'm just working on Future Club games. I can't tell you what they are yet because we have not announced them. But this is a different game from last year. Actually, last year I said that I was going to be working on a different game, and I kind of am. Yeah. I'm not working on the horror game anymore. I'm working on this the deck building game. So that's different. But yeah, I'll just be doing that. That's the plan. That's the goal. Joanna, what are you? You're working on your demo next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect that to take go into next year easily. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't get it done, we'll talk about it in 12 months.
Yeah.
Well, I do have people that are like, oh yeah, when's this input stuff or whatever, and so because I'll tell people I'm working on it, you know, and now I've told more people.
Yeah. You know what, it's actually really interesting because being a guest on the Nicest is really nice because we're not going to hold you accountable.
Hey, if you're not here at the, you know, next year's Nicest, then like, you know,
I get off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And even if you are, like, we're really leaning it towards ourselves.
Yeah.
We got to be nice
to
the guests.
You've seen how bad we are.
Well, I expect. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's our parting message to you, dear listener. Think about the things that you did in the last year, which planning for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself the same grace that we've given ourselves and each other.
Yes.
But also, don't let that hamper your ambitions.
Yeah.
You know, learn Godot. If you've got the time for it, even if you don't, maybe.
That's it. Yep.
try something new. Hone what you're good at. Mm-hmm. You know, decide for yourself what it is that you want to do and make a good year out of it.
Yeah. To briefly talk about our hiatus. So over the next 10 weeks.
10 weeks.
We will be releasing replays of episodes that have come out within about a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so look forward to that because there will be additional content for listeners who have already listened to the episode before.
Yeah.
Because we always have little brief snippets at the beginning.
For longtime listeners, the way we do hiatus every year is we take off a couple of weeks and we pick out our favorite episodes.
Yes.
But we also include at the top of those episodes a little bit of discussion from us about why we chose that episode. And that's always fun to listen to. So even if you've heard it already, there's something new for you.
New
if you haven't, if it went by you, this is essentially a greatest hits. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks.
Yeah.
While we, you know, take off to get started on this list of ours.
Yes.
Well, that is our show, and that's it for us for new episodes for 2024. For show notes on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Threads at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and Gamer Journal. Just singular, Gamer Journal.
Mm-hmm.
The journal of the gamer. Reply there or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and help us balance our books and get ad-free episodes as well as some other fun stuff. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord, say hello, and tell us what your game dev resolutions are.
Yeah.
We want to hear them. Next week, we will be starting our hiatus, so there'll be a new nice replay to listen to, so be sure to tune in for that. But that's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Okay, that's good. Whoever's editing can cut that out or not, but it's actually kind of a good callback to last week.
Yeah, it is.
So.
Okay. I don't mind.